This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. African Americans often wonder what parts of their culture can be directly connected to Africa. We're going to hear the story of one African song that survived the passage to America and was handed down to several generations in one family. The connection was made through vast detective work conducted by my guest, Cynthia Schmidt, an ethnomusicologist, and Joseph Apala, an American anthropologist who has lived in Sierra Leone for over 20 years. Later in the show, he'll talk to us from Sierra Leone, where he remains in spite of the coup. The story begins in the U.S. with a field recording made in the early 1930s of a woman singing an African song that she'd been taught by her mother. This woman lived in an island off the coast of Georgia and was part of the Gullah culture, which, because of its isolation, preserved many aspects of African culture. Schmidt and Opala heard the recording a few years ago and took it around to villages in Africa, playing it for people, hoping to find someone who remembered the song. This is the old, barely audible tape recording they played, sung by Amelia Dolly in 1931. I walk on the moon of somebody else. Someday I walk on the moon of somebody else. I sit in the door to buy a friend. I sit in the door to buy a friend. Amazingly, Schmidt and Opala not only found a woman in Sierra Leone who knew the song, they also found the daughter of the African-American who sang on the 1931 tape, and the daughter knew the song too. Ethnomusicologist Cynthia Schmidt told me about the research, starting with how she went from village to village in Sierra Leone, playing the tape, looking for someone who remembered the song.
We were not successful until February of 1990, and at that point I was doing a field trip with some of my students from the university, and we sat down in one village where I was impressed with the senior woman or head woman of the village and two other singers, and I sat down and played the tape, asked them to listen and see if it was a song that any of them had heard before. And after a couple of words, the one woman named Bindu Jabati began to sing along. And this was an amazing moment. She sang through the first couple of phrases. The words were almost identical. Her song was sung in the Mende style. So the style of the music, of the melody, was quite different. But the words were there. And she recognized this song as one song that her grandmother had insisted that she learn before she died. And her grandmother was a powerful woman in the community who ran or who operated the ceremonies, and she was very important to a funeral ceremony where the people of the village would actually connect with their ancestors spiritually. And it was called Tenjami. And this was the song that they sang as they prepared for it, as the women walked in procession to the cemetery. They sang this song.
Cynthia, what do the lyrics mean?
They start with the words awaka, everyone come together. Momone, let us struggle, let us work together. And then kambe yale, the grave is restless, the grave is, let the heart be perfectly at peace. And this is talking about how this is a time when they connect with their ancestors and the dead are crossing over to another world, from the living to the dead. So this is a time of transition and that it must be done peacefully in order for them to be able to stay in communication with their relatives, their ancestors who have gone. And this ceremony is key to that particular ritual and those particular beliefs about life and death.
After finding a woman in Sierra Leone who knew this song, you wanted to find somebody still alive in the United States who knew it, someone in the Georgia Sea Islands. And so you went looking to find somebody who'd know the song. How did you find somebody who knew it?
We felt that half of the mystery had been solved, but we really needed to see if anyone from the family was still alive on the other side of the Atlantic. And we went to Georgia, and we were very fortunate to work with a woman by the name of Loretta Sams, who had been amongst the visitors from the Gullah region in 1989 and was from the region of Harris Neck. And she knew the area. She knew that some families were still living in that area. And she was able to locate one relative of Amelia Dolly, who happened to be her daughter, Mary Moran, who was almost 70 years old. We went to see Mary Moran with Loretta and were very excited to find out that she knew the song, she could still sing it, she had sung it all her life, and knew very little about it except that it was an African song and they used to dance to it.
Well, let's actually have Mary Moran join us by phone to talk about this song and how she learned it and what her reaction was when you came by. Mary Moran, are you with us?
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Uh-huh.
So what was it like for you when Cynthia Schmidt approached you and played you that 1932 tape of your mother singing this song? What was your reaction when you heard this tape? Did you know the tape existed?
No, I didn't until they brought it to me. All I knew, my mother they took her to St. Simon Island to make this recording back in 1932. I was about 10 years old. It was a shock to me because I had forgotten about the song. I didn't even learn it to my kids because I didn't think that much of it. I thought it was just a little old play toy, something to play with, a dance by. And it was really a shock to me when I heard my mother's voice.
And Cynthia, were you shocked when you saw Mary's reaction? Were you thrilled that she really knew the song?
It was a very touching moment, I think, for all of us, and Mary herself burst into tears when she heard that song. And we were surprised that she sang it almost exactly the same way as her own mother did many, many years earlier.
Mary Moran, how did you learn the song? How did your mother teach it to you?
Well, her grandmother taught it to her, and she taught it to me when I was a little girl.
What did she tell you about the song?
She told me it was an African song, but she didn't know it was an African funeral hymn, but she told me it was an African song.
So how did you sing it? What did you do when you sang it?
You want me to sing it for you?
I'd love it if you sang it for us.
Now?
Yeah.
I walk a mooner, cumbally alley lily, Quambe, I walk among a cumberly alley, lily, quank, has a willy go see ya quenda ya, has a willy go dwell in the quank, has a willy go see how ya bunga lily, has a willy go dwell in the quank. That's it.
And so you sang that through your childhood?
Yes. It had a little beat to it, and I used to dance. But I didn't know what it was all about.
Well, how do you feel now that you found out that there's this incredible link through your family between Africa and African-American culture?
It's amazing. It's very amazing. I'm telling you, it touches me.
Now, is this kind of connection something that had been important to you before? Did you much care about that connection in your life or in the larger world of African-American culture?
No, I'll tell you what. They took me 8 years to decide to go over there to find out what it was all about. But now I'm glad I went.
And why are you so glad?
Because I met my relatives. I met my roots, and I have a close feeling, especially Bendu.
The woman who knew the song.
Right, right. I just wish I can help her in any way that I can.
Mary Moran, do you feel like your life has really been changed by this?
Oh, yes. I really have a close feelings for the people over there. I prayed for them even up until last night. I said a prayer for them because they need help. They really need help. And my children will be going back next year. They will be going back over there to try to help them.
Mary Moran, we also heard from Cynthia Schmidt, an ethnomusicologist at the University of Nebraska. On Friday, we called Joe Apala, an American anthropologist who has lived and worked in Sierra Leone for over 20 years. He initiated and led the research into the song. When we reached him on Friday, Sierra Leone was in upheaval. A coup had thrown out the president, there was fighting in the streets, and Americans were being evacuated. Apala spoke to us from his office at the Mammy Yoko Hotel in Freetown, an international hotel where about 1,000 foreigners were seeking refuge. But the latest reports are that the hotel has been taken over and looted by the Sierra Leone army, and the occupants have been evacuated out of the country or moved to another hotel. We've been unable to contact Apala since the hotel was evacuated. Joe Apala told me why he has continued to live and work in Sierra Leone in spite of the ongoing political upheaval.
Well, this is my home. I've been here 23 years, and I feel that Sierra Leone is as much my country as the United States. And because of that feeling, I want to contribute to Sierra Leone.
And you're willing to risk your life to do it?
Well, at this point, maybe a little stubbornness has come in. I think that I've achieved certain things, and I have been thanked, and I've seen the appreciation. And when the country falls apart occasionally, I just think, well, when it's all over, pick up the pieces and go back and start to work again. So there's a little bit of an element of stubbornness, I think, in all of this.
Does the anthropological work you're doing feel important when there's fighting and chaos all around you?
Well, it's difficult in a country that keeps coming apart like this. You'd like to think that the work you're doing helps to build up the country, and every once in a while the country just comes down and goes to pieces. But I've been through several cycles of this, and I find that when the country starts coming back together again, international agencies and people of goodwill rally around those individuals who are trying to do positive things. And then you have a period of time where you're really accomplishing things and things are getting done, and then it comes crashing down again. But as I say, after being through this more than once, it does give you hope. You know that you'll rebuild again.
What do you feel are the most valuable contributions you can make as an anthropologist to the culture of Sierra Leone?
Well, I've been working on two things. I guess I should start with what's called the Sierra Leone Gullah Connection. About 15 years ago, I discovered that there was a very special link between Sierra Leone and African Americans in South Carolina and Georgia, the Gullahs. And over the years, I've been involved in a number of projects to link Sierra Leoneans with Black Americans in that area. And I've seen the effect. Here on this side, there's a tremendous excitement and interest in knowing that they have family in America, family that they assumed they would never see again. There's been a same sort of interest on the other side for African Americans to know that they have their roots substantially in one particular country has been very exciting. So it's been uplifting, and it's been thrilling, really, to see those links being made and to see what they really mean in people's hearts. On a political level, I think that in the long run, this can help Sierra Leone, because if there are a substantial number of Black Americans who see themselves as Sierra Leonean Americans, as Sierra Leonean descendants, that will eventually, I think, create a kind of an interest group for Sierra Leone in the United States, the way the Polish Americans are, the Irish Americans, or Jewish Americans. And this has even been recognized as a potential source of help for Sierra Leone by the American Embassy. But at the same time, Sierra Leone is also a newly emerging country, and it has a lot of resources in its history and its culture, things that it can be proud of, great men and women who did amazing things in the years past, in centuries past. And as an anthropologist, I find that by highlighting the actions of some of these people and bringing out some elements of the culture that really deserve pride, that this can actually help build up the country. One of the historical figures I started talking about 10 years ago, for instance, is now on the money here in Sierra Leone. So you can see the effect that you're having.
Mary Moran, the Gullah woman who knew the song that had the Sierra Leone connection, went to Sierra Leone and met the woman from that country who knew the song too, Bendu Jabati. And I'm wondering how Bendu Jabati's village has been affected by the fighting over the years.
Well, it was destroyed, and that's one of the things that that made it so hard for Cynthia and me. We didn't know that if we would ever be able to bring Mary back. We met Bendu in, I guess it was 1990, and then sometime in 1993 or 1994, her village was wiped out. Rebels or rebel soldiers went in there and burned it down. A lot of people were killed, and I had no idea where Bendu was. In fact, I assumed that she was probably dead. And then sometime in, it must have been July of 1995, I went looking for Bendu in a refugee camp, one of these giant camps about 30 miles from her village, and I found her. At least they said she was Bendu Jabati. When I looked at her, she was skin and bone, and I couldn't be sure that this is the woman who had sung the song for us a few years earlier. And I actually had to ask her to please sing the song before I could be sure that it was she. And I was so delighted that she was alive, and I was able to provide food and clothing and medicine for her, and in a few weeks she looked like the old Bendu Jabati. But still she was in a refugee camp. But a few weeks before the Morans came, the area became safe again, and she and the other villagers began to go back to the village. Most of the houses were actually knocked flat. So by the time the Morans got there, there were just a few lean-to shelters up, but people were excited, and they were happy to be going back to their village.
What is the importance of that song in the connection between African and African-American culture?
Well, I think this is probably, unless somebody can show me something else, I think this is probably the longest text in an African language ever to be preserved by a black family in the United States, this five-line song. And because it has changed so little, we can translate it substantially. There are parts of it we're not sure about, but it is clearly a funeral song. It's clearly a funeral song that's very close to or closely related to the one that Bendu Jabati sings. So we can actually pinpoint the culture that it came from and the region that it came from and the meaning that it had in the first place to the person who took it to America 200 years ago.
See, forgive me for pointing out this obvious paradox, but you're doing this just incredibly interesting work, making cultural connections between Africans and African Americans, and at the same time, in the small country that you're based in, Sierra Leone, people are just killing each other off.
Well, you know, you read the international press reports about Sierra Leone, and you hear phrases like that, they're killing each other off. And, you know, the perception from the outside world is that these are just a bunch of crazy savages, and they're killing each other, but they don't know why they're killing each other. But when you're in a country, as long as I've been, and you know the country, you know that that's not the case, that there are people here who are out of their mind. There are people here who are savagely killing their neighbors. But you also know that there are people here trying to do their best for their families and their community. And you know, you can see, because you're inside it, that there are forces of order and forces of disorder. So when you become attached to the country and you feel a part of the country, you try to be with those forces of order. But it's not the rampant savagery that the headline news makes it out to be.
Is there a form of cultural consciousness that exists within any of the forces now that are fighting?
Indeed. You know, when the Morans went back to this village, to Senanangola village, they were protected by a very special group of people called Kamajos. And Kamajo is the Mende word for a traditional hunter. And when the soldiers who were out of control and the rebels who were out of control began preying on innocent civilians in the rural areas, after a period of time, they created this Kamajo force. They went back to their ancestral lore, and they created an army that looks like an African army would have looked 200 or 300 years ago, wearing the gowns and the fetishes and carrying the ancient weapons, swords, in some cases even bows and arrows and muskets that their ancestors carried. And they created this traditional African army to protect their villages and to fight off renegade soldiers and rebels. And these are the people who made it possible for the villagers to go back and rebuild, and they were the ones who were there to protect the Morans. And it was an amazing sight to see the Morans helicopter coming down in an area that was cordoned off by these men in these ancient warrior costumes. But now that this military intervention has taken place, those very Camajos are now fighting openly against this military government, and they're protecting their communities, protecting the villages.
There's one more thing I want you to do, if you would. Would you sing us the song that you helped trace the history of, the song that connects African-American and African culture?
All right. Sure.
I'd love it.
All right. I waka mamona kambe alile tambe. I waka mamona kambe alile ka. Hasa willy go siya yibanga lily. Hasa willy go dwell in the quang. Hasa willy go siya yibanga lily. Hasa willy go dwell in the quang. How's that?
That's great. Thank you so much.
Now I can tell my grandchildren that I sang on national radio.
Joe Opala recorded Friday from Sierra Leone. We've been unable to make contact with him since the hotel his office is in was evacuated yesterday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.